This podcast is one of the many good ones on the Self Defense Radio Network.
Hey everybody, Wasilla Steve here from Alaska. You know, I listen to five or six podcasts regularly, and one of them is the handgun world. And why? Because I, too, am a cancer survivor. And because Bob survived cancer, and I survived cancer, Bob got the pleasure of teaching me in two of his classes. And boy, did he ever enjoy that. And I'm not trying to brag or anything, but he taught the best student he has ever had. That being my good friend who attended the classes with me. So here now, a true survivor, a great American, and hands down, one of the best instructors I know, Bob Main.
Hi, folks. I'm Bob Main. Welcome to another episode of the Handgun World Podcast. I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop. And this is episode number 412 of a practical show done by a practical, no law enforcement, no military background guy. And that is me. I'm just a Yankee with a gun, born in New York City, raised in Wisconsin. Now I live in the great gun-friendly state of Texas. So for this 412th episode, last week you probably remember, and I hope you liked that podcast, I had Dr. John Adine, and Ben Branham of the Modern Self-Protection Podcast in the car with me, and we were traveling home from the Rangemaster Tactical Conference a couple of weekends ago. We were making the 9-hour drive from Little Rock, Arkansas, back to San Antonio. Well, I decided to play that first because that was a review of the tactical conference. Now you're going to hear a discussion that the three of us had in the car on the way to Little Rock. You know, during that 9 hours, folks, we talked about a lot of stuff. I really wish I would have had the recorder turned on more than just these last couple times, because we talked about a lot of really cool stuff. That is one of the benefits of getting together with a couple of other like-minded people and driving up to a gun tactical conference for 9 hours. It's great because, you know, you get to really bounce a lot of ideas off of each other and talk to each other. And, you know, the three of us live near each other here in San Antonio. We live within about a 15-mile drive. So we were able to carpool and save some expenses and things like that. And it was really cool. So this is entitled, How Fast is Fast Enough? And that was a question that I posed to both these guys, Ben and John. How fast is fast enough? In other words, how fast do you have to be to win a gunfight, should you be in one? Now, we all hope that that day never comes, right? How many of you listening to this really want to get into a gunfight? I hope you said no to that. We don't. Hopefully that is not our goal, to get up in the morning and say, okay, I want to get into a gunfight today. Absolutely not. I would love to go the rest of my life. I hope I go the rest of my life without ever having to fire my gun at somebody in self-defense. And, you know, the odds are pretty likely that I won't ever have to do that. But I want to prevail in case it happens. Don't you? So I asked them the question, how fast is fast enough? How fast do you have to be? How fast do you have to be to prevail, to win that gunfight? And so that's what we're going to talk about in the interview coming up. This podcast is sponsored by Concealment Solutions, the only sponsor that I have. And right now I'm wearing a Cobra outside the waistband holster, and I'm carrying a Walther PPS M2, Walther's newest single stack 9mm. Great gun that doesn't get much airplay out there. Doesn't get talked about a lot. It seems like the popularity of the Shield and the Glock 43 and some of the other single stacks out there kind of overtake, but the Walther PPS M2 is a great little gun, and I'm wearing my Concealment Solutions Cobra outside the waistband holster for it. I'm going to probably be ordering a couple of Spencer Keepers appendix carry holsters, one for the Shield that I own and one for the Walther PPS M2 that I own, because I really like Spencer Keeper stuff. But Concealment Solutions is the sponsor for the Handgun World podcast, and you get 10% off just by using the code Handgun World. Please make sure that you do that. Now, a topic that I want to cover just briefly before the interview comes on. Somebody emailed me recently and asked me what a 1,000-round trigger job is, because I talk a lot about the 1,000-round trigger job. I really believe that any gun you're going to carry for self-defense, you need to give it a 1,000-round trigger job. And preferably about a 2,000-round trigger job. And it's not just the gun that benefits from the trigger job, it's you. So somebody asked me, well, how exactly does that work, Bob? So I referred them to episode 145. And if you want to listen to some of my older episodes, you're going to have to go to handgunworld.com. I think there's only about 150 of my episodes that show up on iTunes. You need to go to handgunworld.com and just stream it off of my website. Episode 145, I dedicated entirely to the 1,000-round trigger job. And I would strongly suggest you listen to it. And that was several years ago I did that. So you might want to listen to it again, because there's a lot of good stuff in there that I covered that really may help you become a better shooter. Check that out, episode 145 of the Handgun World podcast. Doing that trigger job will improve just about any gun and improve your ability to shoot just about any handgun that you pick up. Now, there is a second part to this interview on a totally different subject. You're going to hear the entire interview that we did on how fast is fast enough. I also asked Dr. John Adine to talk about the myth of the pelvic shot. You know, a lot of people have advocated, just shoot the bad guy in the pelvis. You know, just shoot him in the pelvis area and they're going to not be able to come and attack you anymore. Part of that is a myth, folks. Part of that is a myth. Not all of it, but part of it is a myth. And you need to understand what will and will not incapacitate somebody if you hit him in the pelvis area. So that's going to be on the Shooters Club. Again, that's a separate subject. I'm not cutting off the how fast is fast enough interview. I'm not cutting that off and putting the rest of it on the Shooters Club. A separate subject called the myth of the pelvic shot is going to be on the Shooters Club. So check that out if you're a member. If you're not a member, what are you waiting for? You know what to do. At handgunworld.com, click the Shooters Club link and become a member. To all people who are members of the Shooters Club, we thank you. Ben and I very much thank you for the support. It's a great video program. There's over 66 or 67 videos and, of course, several audio podcasts and a new audio podcast that I'm talking about right now, and it's only $8 a month. How about that? Or you can save money and for $75 get an annual membership. And we've got all the password issues and everything all fixed up. So check that out either at shootersclubmembers.com or handgunworld.com and click the Shooters Club link. Here comes the interview on how fast is fast enough. Well, hey, folks, for a really cool interview for this episode, I've got two captives that are locked in my vehicle on a four-hour drive. We got 4 hours left to get to Little Rock, Arkansas for the Rangemaster Tactical Conference. So I am holding hostage in the passenger seat Mr. Ben Branham of Modern Self-Protection. Ben, welcome back.
Let me go. No, I'm just kidding.
After I get, you know, a good podcast from you, then I'll flip open that right door and you can eat some pavement for a while. How's that?
I'll just jump at 65. No big deal.
And being held hostage in the back seat is Dr. John Adine. John, what's up?
Hey, guys. How we doing? I'm surviving so far.
He said this is more pleasant than being held captive in an OR. So, you know, at least we're scoring some points with it.
A little more fun than that.
I don't know, John, is it more fun or
well, operating's always more fun than sitting in a car for 8 hours.
Yeah, but you're with two, you know, cool quality individuals like us.
Oh, that's true. And we're going to have some good conversation, so it's going to be worth it.
Yes, yes. So we're going to talk about, we kind of had this idea to talk about how important is speed in self-defense pistol shooting. How important is speed, and how important is the first hit, well, or which hit? Excuse me, I shouldn't have said first. Which hit is the most important and all that stuff? Ben, you start. What do you think about speed, first of all?
I'd say it in every class. I just think speed is relevant. All you got to do is be faster than the other guy. Doesn't matter what the timer says. Doesn't matter what's going on. It's a one-on-one competition almost. You just need to beat the other guy.
But how do you know how fast the other guy is going to be?
You don't. And the other guy may cheat. He may have his gun in his hand already. And all you got to do is be faster than he is still.
So should people, I mean, should they practice to a certain level of speed and call it good once they get to a certain spot or what?
Well, I'm always running, trying to run faster and faster and just push myself. But, yeah, there's a lot of things that we can look at that are pars, and we take a lot of them from law enforcement training and stuff, and where they set kind of the bar of a par time of, like, a draw from concealment to a hit at 7 yards, 1.5 seconds. That's not bad. That's not good. That's just in there. That's kind of the average of where you can try to get. But a second and a half is a long time in a gunfight. And if the guy's shooting at you, it's in a long, long time when somebody's shooting at you. So that's why I said speed is all relevant. You just have to be faster than the other guy. If the other guy turns his back to you, decides to walk towards the clerk because he's robbing the store, and he doesn't look at you for the next 10 seconds, well, you just have to be faster than him. You've got 10 seconds to get that gun out and make your first hit, which is, you know, some of us have, you'd have to be really bad if you couldn't do it in 10 seconds.
Yeah. So which hits are important then? What, you know, when do you say, okay, that's enough hits?
When he stops fighting you. There's never, more is always better, but the only way to stop is to when he stops fighting. And it's either he's going to give up, he's going to bleed to death, or you're going to have a central nervous system shutdown. Other than that, just keep shooting him until he gives up.
Okay, you brought up something I want to get John involved in. So, John, what is most likely to shut somebody down? Let's talk handguns right now. What's most likely to shut somebody down and shut them down quickly?
A brainstem shot is probably the best way to shut down the computer. If you shoot somebody through the heart, they probably still have 5 to 10 seconds of perfusion to their brain where they can still do harm. But if you put one in the brainstem, that shuts down the computer and it's all over.
Yeah, there's another subject that I'm going to ask John to use his medical expertise to weigh in on, but we'll make that subject number two. So, Ben, let's get back to speed here for a minute. You and I don't know if you remember, it was about 3 or 4 months ago, we did a video on it. It's on my YouTube channel, actually. We were practicing for speed. We were practicing our draw time, and we were practicing our split times. You remember that?
Oh, yeah, I'm always practicing that stuff.
So what do you think is a good split time?
For me, that's a good question. Right now, I know where I'm running it. 0.17 splits is my kind of my base right now.
0.17.
So that's 0.17 seconds between shots. And that's how fast I can run the gun. And that's kind of as fast as I've gotten it in years. I haven't been faster than that in a while. I'd like to be faster than that. But, yeah, that's just fast. That's, 11 rounds? No, I can't count. That's over 5 rounds a second going into 6 rounds a second that I can make the gun fire and actually hit what I'm aiming at. So that's, how fast is fast enough? I don't know. But it's always something I can just measure and keep working against and say, hey, I could go faster than that, right? Let's see if I can push it a little bit. But more importantly, I think, is that draw time. And that's the one I mess around with the split times just to see how fast I can go. But I'm always messing with that draw time to see if I can get faster.
And you and I have taught a few classes called The Art of the First Hit. And you kind of came up with that. Why do you think that's important? Why is that first hit important?
Well, it came from law enforcement training, and I got to talk to a bunch of law enforcement. Well, they were instructors at the time, but had been in actual gunfights here in America. And that was before it was super popular. but they would it was hard to get interviews back in the late 90s. You didn't hear them or anything. So when I got to talk to him, I was asking him, you know, what's the most important thing you could do to win that gunfight? And every single one of them said, draw to that first hit is going to be the most important thing in your life in a gunfight. And that includes the guy that even had his gun in his hand when the gunfight started once. So draw to the first hit became the thing that I practiced a lot. Because I'm trying to think, that was like 5 or 6 different guys and probably 10 gunfights total. So I need to have that much experience to figure out that one little thing. You know, I'll take their word for it, especially when every single one of them said the same thing. And it wasn't like they were on a panel where I asked them all at the same time. This was multiple different times over a couple year period, and they all said the same thing. So, you know, even being a snot-nosed 20-year-old, I kind of went, huh, maybe there's something here. And then over the years, I just more and more proved that point that you've got to get that gun out sooner or later. I mean, it's got to come out of your holster if you're carrying it, right?
Yeah, it's got to come out of your holster, and you got to be fast and efficient like you were talking about. And John may remember this because about a year ago from now, we took Tom Gibbons' class in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. We took, I think it was, what was the name of that course, John? Was it combative pistol. And you remember, John, I mean, he probably said it 1,000 times, in a fight for your life, you got to quit wasting what?
Time. Time is the most important thing. It's a matter of, you know, being efficient and getting that shot off and not screwing around. No wasted movement. I think that's really the important thing, is making the decision and getting the round off.
Yeah,
time. And making a good hit. The other thing is, you know, you don't want to miss. You have to make the hit. If you, you know, as a lot of people say you can't miss fast enough. Well, that's true. It doesn't make any, you know, it doesn't make a difference if you just make a lot of noise. Unless you're making hits and you're degrading your opponent's ability to put rounds on you or to do harm to you, you're wasting your time. So you need to make the good hits in the center of mass. Well, that's the easiest place to hit. If you got time, you can go for the brain box. But, you know, we all know that we're all taught, shoot center of mass. You want to make the plumbing leak. You want that blood pressure to go down. And you want to discourage the attacker from continuing the fight. Whether it's a physiologic stop or a psychological stop, it doesn't make a difference. You want to get them to stop doing what they're doing.
Yeah, and speaking of time, time can either be your enemy or it can be your asset. It can be your enemy if you're wasting time, and a miss wastes time, right?
Exactly.
A miss wastes time, but then time can be your asset because if you can be proficient with your gun and you can buy yourself some time, if you can increase yourself some time to be able to get out of the situation, to be able to get away, or to be able to, you know, slow down and create more time for you to end the conflict, then that's when time is your asset. So getting back to what Ben was saying, being efficient and getting that gun out of the holster and presented and oriented towards the target, it's important to get fast and smooth with that, isn't it?
Economy of motion is everything. And they say fast is smooth, smooth is fast. I truly believe that. There's some guys that defy the laws of physics that aren't smooth that actually make quick hits. But most of them, if you watch some of the top shooters, Bob Vogel, Jerry Miklick, and you watch them shoot, it's very, very not frantic. They look like they're very, very smooth, very easy out of the holster, very easy the first shot. And those guys are just running the guns at incredible speeds. So more into the smoother you can make it, the faster you can go. So that's kind of nice, but your time combat, I don't know who said it, but if you're in a gunfight, you have the rest of your life to solve that problem. It may be a long time and it may be a little time, but whatever time you have, you got to solve that problem, or, well, there won't be any more problems. You only got one to solve. Got to survive. So whatever the fight is, you got to make it. So it's kind of hard to say, you know, we make all these arbitrary, how fast should you be, how good could you be, all that stuff. And I know Tom Gibbons, I've taken his class. He's a great guy, super smart. If you don't follow him, you should. If you haven't taken his class, you probably should. But there's been lots of gunfights that have been won by misses. People have shot at people and missed, and the bad guy has given up or run away. And that's a gunfight win. If you shoot at somebody and they run away and you missed, as long as they stopped trying to kill you, you actually won the fight. And that's happened more times than we like to admit as instructors, because we want our students not to miss. A hit is way better than a miss, but you know, reality is setting in here. You know, it's happened. So how fast is fast enough? Still don't know. Fast enough to win. That's about it. Are you faster than the other guy? And you can create, you can use tactics. Bob and I teach those a lot, to create a little bit more time for yourself so that you have more time to draw the gun. But in reality, it's always going to be, are you faster than the other guy? Are you better than the other guy? Did you beat him or not? There's nothing else to it.
Yeah, and, you know, all three of us can probably remember this because we took Tom's class. You know, you remember when he was talking about his students that have been in gunfights? It was like over 60 of them. And only two or three of them actually did not prevail. They lost the gunfight. And you guys remember, what was the reason they lost?
Yeah, he says he has 60 wins, zero losses, and three draws. And he calls it three draws because those three people didn't bring their gun and got killed during the fight.
I think he calls them forfeits.
Yeah.
Oh, forfeits. Yeah, you're right.
Three forfeits because they didn't have a gun.
Yeah, so all his students, yeah, that's a lot of gunfights, 63 that his students have been in. And that's
64 or 65.
That's a pretty good win ratio, 60 out of 63. But what's the one common denominator? They didn't have their stinking gun. So I always teach, have your freaking gun. How many guns do we have in the car right now, guys? We counted like 15 or 20, something like that.
A few, because we're headed to the Tom's Rangemaster Tactical Conference in Little Rock that starts tomorrow morning at 8:00.
And we're all carrying one on our persons, and then we have extra ones for the courses.
Just one?
At least I'm lazy today. I only have one.
Oh, yeah, I'm kind of lazy too. But you know, there's something else. You were talking about common denominators of Tom's students that have been in a gunfight. There's also a common denominator, there's two of them I can think of his students that prevailed. We know that, okay, they prevailed because they had a gun. But what's the other one? What's the other reason why there's a common denominator? There's something they all have in common.
I know what you're trying to say, and it's too dumb for anybody to see. They all have training.
Bingo. Thank you. They all went through training. How could they be a student if they haven't gone through training?
Yeah, I knew you guys would miss that out there, and I knew what Bob was trying to get to. It's so simple and so dumb that you missed it, right? Yeah, I know you did.
Or I'm just not good at explaining it.
No, he's good at explaining. He says you should all get training. Yep, that's great. Get your training. I'm a trainer. I'd say get training because it'll help you. Don't rely on luck to win your fight. All you got to do is be faster than the other guy, though. And how fast is the other guy? Well, if you were going up against Bob Vocal or any of these other guys at one of these shooting matches, you'd study and you'd know exactly how fast they are, exactly how fast you need to beat them, exactly where you have to go. The problem is we don't know what it's going to look like, where it's going to be, and how good you have to be. There's nobody ever said after a gunfight that they trained too much, that they could have given up a couple hours of training to play video games because they didn't want to. After the gunfight, you're going to be thankful for every minute that you spent with that gun, as long as you survive.
There's two things you're probably not going to hear when you debrief somebody that's been in a gunfight. You're probably not going to hear them say, I wish I had trained less. And you're probably not going to hear them say, I wish I had carried less ammo.
And here's another important thing that we need to remember. It's not always going to be a raw, two guys standing in front of each other, who's drawing the gun first. There are tricks that you can use. You can use distraction, okay? An example is the guy in the barbecue restaurant who was being robbed, and the robber was pointing a gun in his girlfriend's face. He pulls his wallet out, drops it on the floor, and then he plugs the guy with the gun. When he's distracted to pick up the wallet, then now you can take your opportunity to draw your firearm and to get your good hits. And that guy, as soon as he was shot, he gave up. And it turned out he didn't even have a loaded gun. But still, it doesn't matter. Nobody knew that at the time. So remember, you can use tactics as well. You don't have to, just because you have your gun and the bad guy's got his gun out, you don't have to skin that Roscoe yet. Leave it there. Get yourself into a more advantageous position. Do something that, if you're interacting, do something to distract the guy. Get him to look somewhere else. You know, take your opportunity. Don't show your hand too soon. Take your time. Unless it's happening now and he's getting ready to pull the trigger, then it's a race, and you're probably behind the power curve, and you better move because you need to make him change what he is doing. And we talk about the OODA loop, okay? You need to have him have to reorient to you and to change his reaction. In other words, put him on a reactive course where you're the actor and he's the reactor. Then you have a chance to win.
And John, thank you. What you just described is using time as an asset. You know, buying yourself some time so you can either move, distract the guy, so you have time to draw your gun, so you have time to get your first shot or second shot or third shot or however long it takes on target to stop him, right?
Yeah, use tactics to create time so you have more time and opportunity. And then the hardest one he alluded to is you don't have to skin the Roscoe right away. Man, tactical patience is one of those bears that you just wait. There's somebody in the restaurant with a gun running around, and you're going to stand there and do nothing for a little while. Yes, wait until you have the advantage to use your gun or use your tactics to get out. Patience. We call it tactical patience in the Marine Corps, and it was the hardest thing to learn, the hardest thing to teach. People just want to get in there and take care of business. Wait till you have the tactical advantage to get in there.
Isn't that why we concealed carry?
Yeah.
We concealed carry so we have that opportunity. We're not advertising the fact that we're carrying. We're keeping it on the down low. We're keeping it hidden. We're keeping it stealthy. And then if the time comes when you have to use it, you have that tactical advantage, that tactical surprise, and you can turn the tables on the bad guy and survive to live another day. And that's what it's really all about.
John, thanks a lot. Now I'm going to get emails from all the hardcore open carry advocates. And now they're going to hate me because, you know, you're building up the concealed carries. Now all the all the open carriers that are hardcore are going to be, Bob, wait, tell John. Well, thanks a lot.
It's my personal opinion.
Send your hate mail to bob@handgunworld.com. He loves all of them. And, yeah. No, whatever.
And he'll forward them on to me afterwards, I'm sure.
But all opinions, they are well. So one last point on this segment that I want to bring up, Ben. The three of us, actually. We were talking before we stopped for lunch. We were talking about the new M&P, the new Smith & Wesson M&P 2.0. And I posed the question, do you think that steel-reinforced frame, is that really going to be a big deal, or is that marketing? And, Ben, you were talking about how that could make you shoot faster if you're that skilled and you have the ability to be able to shoot good and shoot fast. Talk about that.
Well, a steel frame gun doesn't bend at all. Pretty obvious. A plastic frame gun, like a Glock, it bends under recoil. And if you pull a high-speed camera, you can see all that stuff. And does it make a difference to mere mortals like us? I'd love to get my hands on one and find out, but I don't think so. I know I could run my 1911 faster than I could run a Glock or an M&P, but I think that has more to do with the trigger and the recoil impulse than it does with the actual plastic versus steel frame of the gun.
I was going to say, that probably has a lot to do with the trigger.
Yeah, so that one, a little different, and the recoil impulse, how it runs. But is it going to make a difference to have a steel frame in there? Well, the steel frame's not going to run, it's not going to bend, so technically the gun could run a little faster, and you could hold on to the gun better, and you don't get that a little wiggle from the gun when it's shooting. Could you go faster? Well, theoretically, yes. And when I started saying theoretically, we talked about times. I can run the gun at 0.17 second splits, and that's my M&P and my Glock and just about any striker fire.
But the gun can go a lot faster than that.
I don't know. How fast can your gun go?
Well, I bet it can do more than 0.17.
I'd like to see what Bob Vogel and some of the other guys with a stock gun do for their split times. I'll bet it's about 1.2.
You mean 0.12?
0.12, sorry, yeah. I moved the decimal point.
I bet it might be.
I hope you guys know what I'm talking
about. I'll look it up on YouTube because I think a lot of those professional shooters have all that stuff, and I'll put some links in the show notes for it, but I bet it's faster than that. But the thing is I doubt that there's very many people at all that can outshoot their gun, that can shoot faster than their gun can shoot, or and also maintain a reasonable amount of accuracy.
Yeah, so the steel frame, I think it's more of a marketing thing. I haven't seen where it's been important. Unless, law enforcement, a lot of this stuff from the Smith & Wesson has been hidden from us, and I can't get all the information. Texas DPS here in the Highway Patrol here in Texas, they were going to the M&P 9mm just like I carry, and then all I hear is reports after reports after reports of them having issues with the gun. And they actually...
Like what kind of issues?
Guns breaking, guns not wanting to run, having all sorts of issues through they started giving it out to the class, the new classes of officers that was going through. And nothing but issues in two or three classes, and they scrapped it. They went back to their SIG. And now I know they're going to probably go to something else. If I had to make a bet, they'll end up with SIG 320s. But that's just a wet finger in the air. But they scrapped the M&P for problems. And I wonder if the M&P was having, in law enforcement, the problem of it being the steel reinforced frame ends. It didn't go all the way out to the front. And the plastic would stick out. And I'll bet cops were dropping that gun on the front plastic. And I bet it would snap off. And this is just conjecture. The frame would break right there. And they were having a problem with frames breaking. Because there is nobody harder on guns than cops. I am hard on my gun. About as hard as anybody alive on a gun. Except for cops.
What about military?
Oh, I'm probably harder than the military is. But military,
they're hard on guns too, aren't they?
They're super hard on them. But trust me, nobody is harder on their guns than cops. They carry them every day, in and out, everywhere. The ones that don't care about their guns, they never come out of the holster. But they get banged on every day. They get thrown into lockers. They get stepped on. They get thrown in the trunk of the car. And no gun lives a harder life than a beat cop's gun. So if they were breaking off at that point, that would be why Smith & Wesson would send that frame all the way along to keep it from breaking off at that point, which would be probably a good idea. But I don't, Glock never had a problem with it. Oh, except for they did.
Oh, except for they did. Well, all those guns getting abused, that's a shame. I think I'm going to start the SPCG, the Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Guns.
Oh, that's awesome. I'll join.
You did join?
But no, I'm giving Glock a hard time. But everybody that has your Glock, all your fanboys, I'm sitting with two of them. They love their Glocks. And I'm going to laugh at them. So Glock had a problem with the plastic melting, but it didn't, right? Oh, yeah, it did. Where is your serial number on your Glock?
Underneath the dust cover.
On the dust cover.
On a piece of metal.
Steel insert. Well, Glock hid the fact that you need that steel insert to keep the gun from melting and breaking apart by putting the serial number there. That little steel insert is not there just to put the serial number there. It's there to keep the gun from falling apart. If you took that steel insert out, your Glock wouldn't run, it would bend, it would heat up, and that plastic would break off. They had all sorts of issues with that until they put that little steel insert there. So, yeah, Glock had the same problem, and it looks like they solved it in a different way. So Smith & Wesson might have found the same problem that Glock did and come up with the same solution. We need a little piece of metal that extends from the trigger guard to the end of the frame here to keep it from breaking.
So it's going to be interesting to see what the 320 does, because that, you know, that chassis is not the length of the entire grip module. So you may end up having issues out there.
You're talking about the SIG P320, right?
Yeah, the SIG P320. But with that grip module's got four rails on it, one on either end of the, but it's not the whole length of the gun. It's just that module itself that has the trigger component to it. So we'll see. We'll see what happens there. Maybe SIG may run into the same problem later on.
Well, so maybe Smith & Wesson's steel-reinforced frame is not just marketing after all. Maybe there's some kind of engineering purpose for that.
That's all I can think of is their engineering purpose. But as of making the gun go faster, we'd need a shooter that was way, way better than me to try it. And I'd love to get some of these guys that are ungodly fast to shoot the gun side by side and see and ask them and run the timer to see if it made a difference or not, because that would be cool. Smith & Wesson's marketing it as a stronger, more rigid frame that allows faster shots, less recoil, and better handling of the gun. But is that all marketing and hype? I don't know, but I really like the grip texture on the new guns, so I got to get me one just to try it because of the new grip texture.
Yeah, I had a chance to get my hands on one. And I do like the texture. I was not able to press the trigger, but it was good. It was good. All right, guys, thanks for this interesting segment. I appreciate it.
Well, good stuff, wasn't it? Many thanks, Ben and John. Thanks a lot. I appreciate it. That's all the audio that I got while we were in the vehicle. By the way, there was a podcaster roundtable that we did at the tactical conference one day. So you need to check that out. A whole bunch of us in the podcast business got together while we were in Arkansas at the tactical conference. Go to the Armed Couples Podcast, the Armed Couples Podcast, and the Armed Squirrels Project. Armed Squirrels Project. Both of them have those available on their websites and on their feed right now. There's some really good stuff in there, too, that I think you'll benefit from. So check both of those out. Hey, Ben and I are probably coming to your town or close to you. And we would love to have you in our Beyond Concealed Carry Enhanced class. Dallas is almost sold out. There's a few spots left for late April in Dallas. Enrollments have started for Utah in May. And enrollments have also started for Illinois and Wisconsin in June. So check that out. Go to handgunworld.com. We also have enrollments that have started for the class that we're doing in Ohio in August with Paul Carlson of the Safety Solutions Academy. Those of you who sign up for that, you're going to get three instructors for that weekend. That's going to be cool. Me, Ben Branham, and Paul Carlson of the Safety Solutions Academy. And I really think that you're going to enjoy that class. So you can find all the class listings at handgunworld.com. And if you like this show, if I help you and help you with your decisions and your concealed carry life, if you don't want to spend any extra money to support me, just make your Amazon purchases through my Amazon store. Many of you do that. Thank you. I'm an affiliate with Amazon. Go to handgunworld.com, click the Amazon store first, maybe save that link. And every time you make an Amazon purchase, use that and you'll help support the Handgun World podcast as well. Folks, I appreciate you listening every week. Thank you for giving me your time. I try to be very respectful of your time. God has blessed me with a great talent here to be able to communicate. And I take advantage of that because, you know, he's given me a lot of blessings in life. Just the ability to live, first of all, the ability to have an abundant life. And so I make the best use of that as I can. Many of you know I'm a strong man of faith. I'm a Christian. I make no apologies for my faith in the Lord Jesus Christ and being a Christian. I'm not saying that you have to do that. I'm not saying that I'm going to look down upon you if you don't share my beliefs. I'm just telling you what my beliefs are. And I would urge you to balance what you hear on this show with your own level of faith, if you have one, or your own level of morality and things like that. And take the best, leave the rest. I hope that I give you some pearls of wisdom in every single episode. Whatever you don't like, just leave it. I'm a big fan of that. Take the best and leave the rest. You're never going to agree with everybody. And, you know, folks, I hope you don't agree with everything that I do or say on this show, because you need to be a little bit more of an independent thinker than that. But I try to stimulate thought in you and give you some ideas and things that can help you right away in your journey in concealed carry, competition shooting, self-defense shooting, and whatever else that it may be. So remember, folks, the loudest sound a shooter hears is a bang when he's expecting a click, or a click when he's expecting a bang. Shoot straight, shoot safe. I'll talk to you next week. Goodbye.